Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Congrats to caller 10, 800-636-1067. You're winning 2 tickets to see John Fogerty. It's the Celebration Tour, Sunday, June 9, Jiffy Lube Live. Tickets are on sale now. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com/events, courtesy of Live Nation. We are Grant and Danny. We're at Tap Sports Bar. MGM National Harbor will be here until 6:30 tonight. Come on out and hang with us. We're watching tourney games. We got a little bit of life, I would say. 42-28 at the half, pulled to within 10 on the Grant and Danny locked bet where we jumped on New Mexico over Clemson. We're still very much going to lose the bet, but where I wanted to light it on fire, I'd say at least now we should know where it is, just in case.
I've got it. I've got it secured.
Yeah.
But it's also pretty secure that we're losing it, because after all the good, they're still down 14 at the half.
Beltway Blitz. We'll cover college hoops with our guy Chris Nocke, spin around the tourney. Also, the Nats with Bobby Blanco. Make sure you lock in for that Nats combo in about 10 minutes. They just made major announcements as it pertains to their roster and some of the prospects that they sent down and kept up. So we'll get to that with Bobby Blanco in this blitz. But let's kick off right now on the ice. Huge game for the Caps tonight. Big storyline. Yevgeny Kuznetsov coming back to town tonight. 7 o'clock puck drop. Downtown in D.C. for the Hurricanes and the Capitals. Washington, after a tough loss to Toronto, has got to get a couple of points tonight to try to keep pace in the playoff push. Bailey Johnson covers the Caps for the Washington Post. So, Bailey, why don't we start with the Kuzi return and the Hurricanes? What do we need to know about a huge one tonight?
Yeah, kind of a weird night a little bit with Evgeny Kuznetsov coming back only 2 weeks after he got traded to Carolina at the trade deadline. Has been a good move, I think, for both sides. He seemed to get off to a really good start there, and the smiles on his face when you watch them play. He's playing well, high in their lineup, getting a lot of trust from Rod Brind'Amour. They're playing really well right now. They've won 5 in a row after beating the Flyers in overtime last night. So one thing to know is that it's a back-to-back for the Hurricanes. They got into D.C. last night after playing at home, but it was also a back-to-back for the Maple Leafs on Wednesday, and that was no problem for them against the Caps in that 7-goal game. So could be a difficult one tonight. The Hurricanes are a good team, and they're playing well, but I think the high emotions on both sides of Kuznetsov being back, but also the Capitals playing against him for the first time, should make this a pretty good game.
Can we dive deeper into who's not there for the Caps? No Protas, no Oshie, probably no Willie, and also an update on Willie's hearing.
Yeah, so we don't really know what's going on. I would imagine it's happening now, or maybe wrapping up. All that we were told was it was in the afternoon, and usually they try to get those decisions out before the game. So sometime in the next couple of hours, we'll know where Tom Wilson stands after having his hearing today for the high stick on Noah Gregor late in the Toronto game. Obviously, the Capitals are preparing to not have him tonight. He took the scratch of skate this morning with Ethan Bear. Yes, no Oshie and no Protas. Protas has a lower body injury stemming actually from when he blocked a Connor Bedard shot against the Blackhawks almost 2 weeks ago now that he's been kind of playing through off and on, but is struggling with. And Oshie's upper body sort of the same situation. They both skated this morning, so maybe a possibility for Sunday, but won't play tonight.
Bailey, they've got 14 games left, these Washington Capitals do. What needs to happen, and it obviously starts this evening, for them to have a realistic shot at being a postseason team?
They've got to win a bunch of them, unfortunately, because they've got a really difficult schedule coming up. I mean, between Carolina tonight, Winnipeg on Sunday, who they just lost to in Winnipeg last week, and then, not to look too far ahead, but Detroit on Tuesday might be the biggest game of their season, given that's the team they're directly chasing for the second wild card spot right now. They have a really difficult remaining schedule, but they need to string some wins together. They've done a relatively good job of that over this last stretch to keep pace, but they haven't quite gone on the true winning streak that they need to really solidify their chances. It's kind of been win two or three, lose one, win two or three, which is better than going on a losing streak, and they certainly can't afford to lose multiple games in a row right now, but they need to just kind of get themselves on a roll and start to build some momentum.
Bailey, am I making this up, or before you covered the Caps, didn't you cover the Columbus Blue Jackets?
I did cover the Columbus Blue Jackets. You're correct.
Okay, I ask you this because you're not one of us, right, where you're just a DC-er, and you know Tom Wilson's been here since he was a baby. So you were in a market where they probably hated his guts at one point. I'm curious, what did you think of the stick to the face, and what do you expect in the suspension?
It's a really, really tricky one. It's one of those where it's so egregious and violent that you almost think he couldn't possibly have actually meant to hit him in the face, because it would be so beyond the pale if that was an intentional play. But also, Tom's history doesn't give him a lot of leeway in the benefit of the doubt in those situations with the league. It's been 3 years since he's been suspended, which might help his case, but he obviously has a lengthy disciplinary history, and that doesn't usually engender a whole lot of benefit of the doubt. I saw that Noah Gregor said today, like, he didn't think Tom meant to do it, and he's not injured, which sometimes sways the outcome a little bit, or they occasionally take that into consideration. But I would imagine that he'll get at least a couple of games. I wouldn't think the in-person hearing gives them the opportunity to suspend for more than six games or more. I would be surprised, I think, if he got that many, but we're probably looking at least a couple of games here, I would guess.
Over this final 14 here, Bailey, who's got to be great for them to get where we're talking about them going?
Yeah, I mean, you look at guys who are going to have to step up in absences of guys like Protas and Oshie. So that's a guy like Connor McMichael, who's been playing well lately. Matthew Phillips, who they just called back up to slot it on the wing. If he can give them anything, that would be huge. Mike Scarbosa comes back into the lineup and it has an opportunity there playing on the right side. Hendrix Lapierre has been strong, Ivan Marushnichenko. They need their veterans as well. Alex Ovechkin's got back-to-back two-goal games, so he's playing well right now. Yeah, a lot of guys, kind of a by-committee thing where they pretty much all need to raise their level a little bit if they're going to make a push.
Bailey, thank you. We appreciate you.
Thanks, guys.
Let's spin you around the tourney, talk some college hoops.
College hoops.
Ooh, that was, I like that,
hey,
Darris.
Frisky.
I didn't know where he was going to go because you can't play the chirping sounder.
Oh, that's awkward.
Let's talk to our guy, Chris Nockey. First of all, last night was a blast. Kentucky losing to Oakland, it wasn't even the Oakland I thought it was when I filled out my bracket, was just the best. But also I want to talk about where Kentucky goes from here. 4 years in a row now where they're not in the tourney or they're getting bounced in the round of 32. Calipari's got a trusting freshman in this era problem, doesn't he, Chris?
Yeah, he sure does. And, you know, he said as much afterwards, after completely throwing most of his team under the bus. You know, he acknowledged the fact that freshmen, just playing freshmen, really aren't the way to go in this day and age. I would imagine, you know, there's too big of a buy out there to, he's not going anywhere, but he's going to have to change the way he does business. And otherwise, you'd just be foolish to keep banging your head up against the wall like he has the last 4 years.
Who impressed you the most yesterday?
Oh, I love the Oakland story, Danny. I mean, come on. That guy has been there for 40 years, Greg Campy. I've met him a couple of times, outstanding guy, but he's got a freaking accountant just raining threes on a bunch of future NBA players. That, to me, is thus far is the best story of the tournament. But, you know, this is a long – there are a lot of volumes yet to be written here, and today was another excellent day with – I'm sure you guys kept an eye on most of these early games and – there was the Northwestern game against Florida Atlantic
was thrilling.
Epic, right down to the end. Yeah, and then with the San Diego State game that just ended was every bit as good. Teams just won't go away in this tournament. You know, you gotta stick a knife through the heart to get teams to die.
9:40 tip local tonight for number 12 James Madison football school who can play a little hoops. 31-3 this year for James Madison in the Sun Belt. They take on number 5 Wisconsin. What kind of chance do you give them this evening?
Well, they're playing a hot team. Wisconsin, well, you know, they're both hot for that matter. Wisconsin really ended the season on a high note. The thing that surprised me about Wisconsin this year is they're not walking it up. They're playing at a much faster pace than most Wisconsin teams we've seen in years past. But they've also flamed out recently in the tournament. I think it's going to be a good game. James Madison certainly has a fighting chance. Not only have they won the 31 games, they won at Michigan State early in the season. They're not going to be fazed by playing a Big Ten team tonight. No question.
Chris, I had Tennessee in my finals and most of my brackets. That looked pretty decent through one game, admittedly, yesterday. I know they beat up a 15-seed St. Peter's, but they looked unbelievably good to me. What's your read on them?
Yeah, and I think they defend well enough, too. To win the tournament, I think you have to be able to win a 60-58 game. That's why I would short teams like Creighton. I mean, I'll watch Creighton play till the cows come home.
Yeah,
they can score so easily. But I just don't know that they're going to win a 60-58 game. And Tennessee does just that. And they've got enough guys who can score. They've played in the best league in America, I think, in the SEC. And also, Dan, I think it helped them to lose when they lost. You know, Rick Barnes will tell you that he would love to have played more games in that SEC tournament, but I think he got their attention with that early loss and early bounce out of the SEC.
Chris, be remiss if we didn't ask you about Maryland, where you fought your trade all year long. Obviously an ugly season for Kevin Willard. Maybe just a thought on where they're at and where they can go from here. Also, just local college hoops this year. In Virginia,
yeah,
scoring 14 in the first half in their play-in game. Georgetown, I spend a lot of time at Cap One Arena watching them. They're a disaster. I like that Cooley hire, but, man, does he have a long way to go. It was about as bad a year locally as I can remember.
Well, the only team even remotely local is VCU, and they're still alive. Nobody else is really playing. I guess JMU would be relatively local, but, yeah, it was a dreary season, certainly for the Terps as well. And, you know, got off to a bad start, and they were never able to right the ship. Had a couple of signature wins, and I thought in the conference, you know, they win at Illinois, you know, at Iowa, you think, okay, we found something. And then we didn't find Jack, you know. I mean, it just didn't work. And there will be some wholesale changes, and that's the way it works in this day and age. The lack of continuity in most college basketball teams is startling, but it's the landscape. It's the environment right now.
Chris, always great to catch up with you, buddy. Appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, boys. Enjoy it. Thank you.
We'll see you, man. Hit that national sounder, Darius. Bobby Blanco from the Bronx covers the Washington Nationals for Masson. Bobby, some roster moves were made. What do you got?
Yeah, perfect timing, guys. A lot of news coming out of camp. They actually got rained out tonight against the Astros, but they're still making news. Some final roster decisions being made before opening day. They have reassigned their top prospects, Brady House, Dylan Cruz, Robert Hassel III, and James Wood, to minor league camp. So those guys will not be on the opening day roster. I would expect most, if not all of them, to start at AAA this season. And then also some veterans that they've kept along. Richard Blyer stays within the organization, the left-handed, the crafty lefty reliever. So he'll be at AAA, hopefully using as a backup relief pitcher if they need it, especially a left-hander down the line in a couple of weeks or so. And then they also released Zach Davies, the guy who was competing for the fifth spot in the rotation. He had a rough outing, his last frame with the Nationals in spring training the other day. Kind of did it into him. He gave up 7 runs, finished the night with 9 earned runs, and looks like he will not be making the team as the Nationals release him, and Trevor Williams will be your fifth starter. Notice how I did not mention Trey Lipsicum as amongst the cuts. He is still in big league camp.
Yeah, Wood, Cruz, House, Hassel. To reiterate what you said, getting sent down. But you mentioned Trey Lipsicum, the Tennessee product who's had such a great camp, entering year 3 now as a pro. He going to make the team?
It's going to be close now. I mean, we talked about this a little earlier this week, and I think I said that, you know, it was still kind of unlikely, but there's still a chance. After this round of cuts, it looks like he's pushing for a spot. I mean, David Martinez said the other day he wants to keep these guys around as long as possible. And then when you have the top guys like Cruz, House, Wood, Hassel going down and Lipscomb stays, I think that's a sign that he still has a chance to make this roster. They have three Grapefruit League games left this weekend, a doubleheader tomorrow, and a finale on Sunday against the Mets. I would expect him and Luis Garcia to play a lot in those two games, and that might be those results might make the final decision tough for the Nationals to see whether or not Trey breaks camp with the team.
So what does that mean for Luis Garcia then? He's out of options, right?
He's out of options, and I've always thought that the Nats would keep him because I think they would, you know, obviously they could easily send Lipscomb back down to the minors. He hasn't made his major league debut. There's no need. That's a very easy roster maneuver, but they cannot do that with Luis Garcia. He would have to be exposed to waivers, and you would think, you know, 23 years old, a guy that has a somewhat of a track record in the major league, some other team would take a shot on him. Maybe he just needs to change his scenery. So if the Nationals decide to select Trey Lipscomb over Luis Garcia, that would probably signal the end for Luis' time here in the Nationals because they can't just send him down to the minors. He would have to be put on waivers first.
Great info. We appreciate you as always, Bobby. Be good, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Enjoy the weekend.
See you, buddy.
You know how close we are to opening day, Danny? I just got an email in my inbox from the Washington Nationals.
What does it say, Grant?
A little press release with their opening day pregame ceremony plans. Former Mayor Anthony Williams going to throw out the ceremonial first pitch.
Okay.
Fan favorite D.C. Washington.
Yes.
Set to perform the national anthem. And Mayor Muriel Bowser going to scream play ball into that microphone on the dugout.
Microphone glass.
Before we get opening day started.
That'll be a hoot.
Now, I don't know. Maybe it's my lack of care for just in general, like keeping up with politicians. Can I get like a capital or a commander? Like how about Terry McLaurin throws out that first pitch?
Like Anthony Williams, that's cool. He was the guy in charge when they brought baseball to D.C., you know.
Okay, makes some sense.
No, but that's neat. Cool. He can do something.
John Riggins?
There we go. You see what I'm saying? Give me something else.
Katie Ledecky.
Right?
I'm trying to think of a superstar local. What about John Barenthal?
There you go. Sidwell Fred Zone.
Jose Andres.
Yeah.
Who's the guy Wright, the actor, just won an Academy Award?
Jeffrey Wright said almost.
Jeffrey
won.
Wright.
That's right.
What about something like that?
I'm into that. But like, there's so much D.C. sport kind of connection.
Yeah.
You know, like old-timers, guys like Sugar Ray Leonard or, I don't know. Is Kevin Durant busy? Probably will be with playoffs
and stuff.
What about Kevin
Durant takes a week off from the Suns? They never play anyway. Like, Brad Beal's missed 30 games.
Yeah.
Durant can just leave, come throw the first pitch.
Call
and
load
go back.
Management, throw out the first pitch. I don't know.
Adam Peters. That dreamboat walks out, kind of just flicks his hair a certain way, puts his, you know, combs his hair with his fingertips.
Adam Peters, it's your pitch.
It's your pitch. He's like, first I'm going to sign two 33-year-olds to one-year deals.
Give me a second. Adam's like, sorry, guys, one moment. Hey, girl, how's it going? Yeah, this? It's not a beard. It's 5 o'clock shadow, but I look dreamy, don't I? Excuse me, I've got to go sign a couple of guys to short-term contracts.
It's probably too busy having a dinner with, like, a top-5 quarterback. G&D on the fan next. Speaking of the NFL, sounds like we got rule changes coming. Hip-drop tackle could get you penalized, and kickoffs could be changed forever this season. Let's get into that on the fan. Welcome back to Tap Sports Bar, MGM National Harbor. Grant and Danny live with you until 6:30 on this Friday, 2 hours from right now. Come on out and hang with us. We will be here getting out of the office near the Woodrow Wilson Bridge. Virginia, Maryland, doesn't matter. Come on over the river and watch some college hoops. Second day of the tournament, round one of the NCAA action. We'll get you a full scoreboard and breakdown of the day's festivities coming up in about a half hour at 5 o'clock. So if you want to update the bracket and get to the bottom of some of your bets, make sure you're tuned in at that time. Danny, the NFL's competition committee's proposed a revamped kickoff that could go into play this year if it is passed. They also would like to penalize players for hip-drop tackles. We talked a little bit about the hip-drop tackle.
Yep.
Not just yesterday, but the day before as well. But I want to put a bow on that really quickly before we get to the kickoff. I'm adamantly opposed to to penalizing for the hip drop tackle. Not because it's not a dangerous play. It is. They've got the numbers. They tell you that at a 30% clip, guys are more likely to get hurt. Serious injuries happen. I understand that, and their job is to try to legislate that out of the game. But the Players Association correctly, and I think players, even though they're the ones supposedly that should want this because they're getting hurt, they're coming out and saying, please don't do this. It's already getting so hard to play defense. You already have all of these rules of where we can tackle and how we can tackle and where we target, that defense is getting worse and worse and that points are going up, which is not a problem for the fans. But I can't hit high because I might hit you in the head if you move your target.
Uh-huh.
I can't hit low because I'm going to tear your ACL. I got to try to square you up somewhere in the middle. And now when I wrap you in the middle and try to sling you to the ground,
that's a problem too.
Leave the ground while I'm doing that, you're going to penalize me. You're going to fine me money. You're going to cost me financially. But you're also going to potentially change a game with a call. So I just don't know what you want defenders to do. I hate this. I don't think they'll be able to legislate it correctly. It's going to be way too arbitrary and way too fast of a game. I could not be more against the idea of now critiquing the type of tackle. It's one thing with horse collar where I can see if the fingers are inside the collar.
Uh-huh.
This is now, well, did you wrap him and did you leave the ground?
Did you roll sort of?
Did you thrust in one direction? It's no, stop this. It is a slippery slope to a ridiculous-looking game 20 years from now.
Now, so let me try to explain it this way. I'm gonna come around to the same view. Okay, if this was a computer simulation, this was a program where a hip drop tackle was a series of ones and zeros, and it materialized on the screen a certain way, and you were able to delineate it and definitively say each and every time it happens, let's call a penalty. I could live with that. To your point, this one's too hard. This one is what meets the criteria. Like when you spoke to Troy Vincent about this at the Super Bowl, and when guys speak of this in an academic sense.
Grab that, by the way, Darius, if you can for me.
It makes sense what they're saying, right? The view of the league and the view of the people that want this rule, it 100% makes sense to me. I get you. I hear you. The problem as it materialized with defensive linemen who are much bigger than a lot of quarterbacks, with linebackers who are bigger than quarterbacks, are hitting these guys, trying to roll off them, but even still, it's like, nope, your body weight landed on part of him, and so that's bad. You threw him to the ground, that's bad. You hit him low, even though someone was blocking you, that's bad. You hit him high, that's bad. You hit him in the middle, but you didn't roll enough off to separate your shoulder on the way past, so that's bad. The permutations, as it applies in the real world, don't work. That's what makes it a non-starter for me.
Hits in the secondary, helmet to helmet. Legislated horribly. One of the most frustrating things about watching the NFL right now is that legislation of those rules, the violent head contact, which we should be trying to rid the game of. Sure.
Yeah.
But the flag that comes out immediately because there was a loud collision or something that looked obviously violent as a precautionary measure is often wrong in terms of it being illegal as a hit. I think, to your point as well, the roughing of the passer legislation's terrible. It's the biggest officiating issue I think we have. If you're looking into specifics of when you're watching a game, you get most annoyed by what rules are often legislated the most poorly. I think all the roughing of the passer stuff's a joke. This, to me, is harder to legislate than either of those two things. When you're talking about the word they use is swivel. Swivel, hip, drop, tackle. And they're going to look for wrapping a guy up, so form tackle essentially at that point, and then leaving the ground, basically taking your weight into the air as you swivel them toward the ground because your body then goes into the back of their legs. The way, by the way, that almost every tackle from behind that's a hustle tackle happens. The way, by the way, that almost every single tackle from a smaller guy tackling a bigger guy happens. You're a corner. You're tackling a big tight end, Rob Gronkowski. Good luck. You are a safety, and you're tackling a monster wide receiver who's got you by a couple of inches or 15, 20 pounds, some big Z receiver in the middle of the field. Good luck. I just don't trust them to be able to do it. Is the idea of getting rid of the play a bad idea? No. If I could touch a button and just get rid of the play, I would do it.
Right.
But there's got to be a juice worth the squeeze conversation here. There's got to be a discussion and some dialogue on is this a thing we can actually ref well? And I don't think there's any debate. You can't. You're not going to be able to legislate this correctly. You've proven it with two things that are easier to decipher in roughing the quarterback and the helmet-to-helmet stuff.
Because more often than not, you say easier to legislate. The quarterback is semi-stationary, right? That's what makes it easier. These are two people running in full speed, usually with exact opposite goals, right, to get past a certain way. It's just
And I also just think there are times where the only way to make a tackle is a hip drop tackle. And it's not the dirtiest version of it, if that it sounds silly. But, like, there's a time occasionally where we go, oh, that was kind of gross. Like, on the sideline where your whole weight comes down on the guy's ankle. And you go, you probably could have done that better. But there are also, I'm hustling. I'm trying to save a touchdown. Game's on the line. I'm just diving, reaching out, pulling you backwards and landing on your legs. So we're just supposed to now say, you can't do that. Just pull up. I'm sure the optics are good on that.
Right.
DBs or guys that just stand next to someone who streak away from them because they were afraid that if they dove and tackled a guy, they got fined $20,000.
You better give up.
A 15-yard penalty that set them up, you know, first and goal anyway or whatever. It sounds great until you actually do it. This was Troy Vincent. I talked to him at the Super Bowl in Vegas about this. This is what he had to say.
We've looked at first injury first. You got 20 times the injury rate, almost 20, 30 times the injury rate on that particular play. We've now studied it enough over the last, the current past two seasons where you see the grab, swivel, and as we would say, unload, or you drop your weight. It is in the family of the horse collar tackle. So when you look at that play, the mechanics, this is not to remove the hustle tackle. This is not to remove the tackle from behind. But there are three elements that exist when you see it. It's the grabbing, the swivel, and then the unloading on the back part of the leg that is really causing significant injuries. We have enough. We've studied this with our officials. We've studied this with the competition committee. Again, the membership will have to make a decision. But there's enough plays. The injury rate is so significant. And this is part of the adjustment, getting the head out.
Right.
But again, by no measures are we trying to take away the hustle tackle, the tackle from behind. But when you watch it, it has all of the traits of the horse collar tackle.
Jay Gruden, for what it's worth, on social media a couple of weeks ago, said that he thought the hip drop tackle being penalized the way that they want to is going to ruin the game. And I'm not going that hard, but I would be curious if any of you guys want to hop in and give us your thoughts on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. If you're either for it, because that's not being represented by me or Danny, 800-636-1067, or if you're with us, you know, how adamantly you think this would be a mistake and an issue if the league went that route. The rule change we have not discussed, Danny.
And this is the bigger one, I think.
This one is fascinating. And that is the possibility of the old XFL kickoff from last season coming to the National Football League. Now, what's really, really funny is that this kickoff is not even going to be used in the UFL this year, which is the XFL, new name because they merged with the USFL. But they've gotten rid of it because essentially they decided that there was not enough evidence that it cuts down on injuries substantially in 1 year. But I think if you bear it out over a bunch of years,
you'd have a better, more
that may have been the case. But here's what actually happened. Kickoffs got returned. There was action, and the action was awesome. So the gist would be, I'll just read from this ESPN story, the kickoff proposal would be the most significant on-field change as far as NFL rules. Two kickoffs designed to reverse a decade of declining return rates while also lowering concussion rates. In essence, the committee's proposal would move the majority of the kicking and return teams downfield to minimize high-speed collisions. If approved by at least 24 of 32 owners, the rule would go into effect for 1 year only. So they would do it this year. They see what happens. The kicker would continue to kick from the 35-yard line. Here's what's different. The other 10 players would line up at the receiving team's 40.
Uh-huh.
So across midfield, right? Kicker's at the 35. So 25 yards downfield is where his 10 teammates are, kind of with their backs to the kicker, facing the receiving team, looking at the kicker, obviously. Receiving team is still aligned just like you would see in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Except that to combat now their adversaries that are lined up in a straight line, like they would be on the same line of scrimmage as the kicker, they're 25 yards downfield at the plus, you know, at the opponent's 40. So almost like man coverage, instead of the traditional alignment, the receiving team has one guy in front of every single one of those 10 players. The 11th, like the kicker, is the return man. who's back returning the kick. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, indeed.
So they're at their own 35-yard line or 30-yard line, wherever they want to be. 5 or 10 yards separating them from the guys that they're going to block at their 40. Up to 2 returners, so you could go 9 against 10 to block. Most teams go 10 on 10 and can have one back, are in a landing zone. So between the goal line and the 20-yard line is where the ball's got to basically land. And if it doesn't, you get penalized. Sounds crazy. I hated the idea of it or the sound of it.
Because at first you look at it and you go, what?
It's just archaic and it sounds nonsensical. But I promise you, I'll find a video and post it. It's outstanding. The other thing is you can't start running until the ball is kicked and then lands, essentially, or is caught. So you get returns. You get one-on-one blocking without high-impact collisions. It's pretty textbook blocking, or if you beat a guy getting down the field with speed. No one other than the kicker or the returner can move until the ball hits the ground or is caught by the player. Touchbacks would be marked at the 35-yard line, bringing them out 10 more yards further because you're trying to make returns happen again. You want returns. You don't want touchbacks. They're boring. You're not allowed to fair catch it in that catch area from 20 and in. So what you get out of the XFL is actual returns, theoretically less injuries, and real action on a play that's dead. Thoughts?
So I view sports differently than a lot of people. And I know I view it differently than, say, the NFL brass does. They've been on my side in a number of cases where they acknowledge the extra point, this is years ago, is boring. We got to do something about that. We can't have boring. The single most boring thing that happens in the NFL are kickoffs now. That's just a fact, whether you like it or not, whether you're in favor of it or not, whether you enjoy kick returns, you don't, whatever, nothing happens. The ball is kicked. Immediately the guy's like, I'm the letter T in the end zone. And nothing else happens, and everyone jogs down, and it's a chance for the announcers to wax poetic. That, to me, is an emergency if I'm the NFL. They've been on the cutting edge of making stuff more exciting.
It's a play that doesn't matter.
I would go, I mean, two ways to do it. Either every touchback, it starts at the 40, or you do it this way. Well, I need returns.
More than 90% of kickoffs were returned. There was action on 90% of plays in the XFL doing this the last couple of years that they've done it. Do you guys think they should try this? And are you willing to say that the kickoff is broken and that there aren't enough returns like I am and like Danny is? 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067, MGM, National Harbor Listener Lines, out at Tap Sports Bar with Grant and Danny.
What the special teams coordinators wanted to create was a reduction in the speed and space, but preserving enough space, you can at least have strategy and you're going to get real returns. And so they were tasked with how do you increase returns while decreasing the injury rate to a palatable number. They think that they've gotten to a good place on this moving forward, and there's going to be a lot of discussion about it, but all 32 special teams coordinators were met in person at the combine to go through this. And it's basically, hey, we can't go back. We're never going back. We want to have the kickoff in the game. We have to find a way to make it safer, but also encourage returns. And, you know, in talking to a bunch of the special teams coordinators, I can tell you on one hand, they're very annoyed because they literally have to create entirely new strategy every year because the rule keeps changing every year. On the flip side of it, now they can earn their paychecks and they can, you know, have a little fun and show some creativity and come up with ways you can have returns.
That's the voice of Tom Pelissero on the Rich Eisen Show. Grant and Danny from Tap Sports Bar, MGM National Harbor, watching day two of the tournament on this opening Friday. Great action in front of us right now. Auburn just underway, representing the SEC against Yale in a 4-13 game. They lead 14-10. Also out of the SEC, 7-seed Florida has a 5-point edge early against Colorado. Played their way in to the tournament. 17-12 lead for the Gators about 5 minutes into that game. We'll get you a full report on everything going on in the tournament, including Connecticut absolutely destroying Stetson.
They looked the part.
In a 1-16 game. This is the opening round tilt for the Huskies, the defending champions, and I think most people's expected favorite to cut down the nets again. But we'll get you your full analysis of the tourney coming up at the top of the hour. Should the NFL change the kickoff rule to resemble something like what the XFL did the last couple of years? And I know a lot of our listeners didn't track the XFL, so we've been trying to explain what it would be. But essentially, the coverage unit, 10 guys, would be across midfield, standing flat-footed until the ball lands from the goal line to the 20, where it has to be kicked. You can't kick it out of the end zone long. You can't. Touchbacks are a bigger penalty. You bring the ball all the way out to the 35, 10 more yards of field position. So you're demanding that teams essentially land the ball into this return zone, as they call it, from 0 to 20. And then, because the players can't start running until the ball's caught or hits the ground, you can strategically kick it away from a return man. It takes away from some of the collisions. It makes the return safer. 90% of kickoffs were returned in the XFL. It was an exciting play again. That's why I love it. I think anyone who watched that league and saw the kickoff is for this. I think if you're not, you're probably not familiar with it yet. But here's where maybe we can hit the phones at 800-636-1067. Mm-hmm. How can you possibly not want them to make a change? If they're keeping the kickoff, which it seems like Pelissero just said they're going to, over hell or high water, what they do now can't work. It's a touchback three-quarters of the time. It is a wasted play. It's a I'm going to go get a drink or go to the bathroom sequence. You just stand at the goal line, let it go over your head, and bring it out to the 25 at an 80% clip. That's ridiculous. We have to try something else. And it seems like people are unwilling to try something way different when that's exactly what's needed.
So if you're – like, you and I have a couple gripes that we have in common with certain rules and things that we always meet resistance where people go, if you don't like it, play defense. Or if you don't like it, don't fumble near the end zone or something like that. I just can't imagine going, God, I can't wait for a touchback. You know what I mean? Like, if you look at the average NFL kicker this year was north of 80%. The middle ground is 80% touchback percentage. Jake Elliott was 17th in the league at exactly 80.2%. The lowest touchback percentages are guys like in the 65, 66% range. The majority of this league kicks it in, out, through the end zone nearly every damn time for a touchback. If you can say that that's fine, doesn't matter because I want to go pee or I want to go get a beer or whatever, okay, I got that's all good. The NFL has basically not let things get to the point, for the most part, where we go, ah, this isn't any fun, or this isn't good, or this is not interesting to watch, and they fix it. This one they don't really seem to be that eager to fix. Now, I know there is a rule change pending. I bet you it doesn't pass. There are two ways to go to me. You keep the current kickoff system the same, a.k.a. everybody lines up the way they've always lined up. You move the kicker back another 5 yards if it means, or more, 10 yards if it means, and you penalize people for touchbacks to the point where it's prohibitive to have a touchback, right? If you kick the ball out of the end zone, it goes to the 40-yard line for the offense, or it goes to the 45, or something crazy to get people out of this. They've gotten too good at blasting the ball in and out and through the end zone. Or you adopt these rules, which I think make everything safer.
I think it would not only be safer, but more importantly, I think the game would get better. Like, that's the language I'd be speaking to NFL fans if I'm trying to get this rule implemented. Forget safer. That is a nice secondary kind of byproduct. That is a nice bonus. The game gets a lot better immediately. I think if you're really young right now, you have no idea how exciting kickoff returns used to be. When I was a kid, my favorite player on the Redskins was Brian Mitchell, who does the midday show here on the Fan.
I know Brian Mitchell.
He was my favorite player because when he went back to the goal line, almost every single time someone kicked, he would return it, and a lot of the time he would rip a return off. Sometimes he would score a touchdown. But every time there was a kickoff, there was a chance he was going to go to the house. Now, he's the greatest to ever do it, maybe, and he's a Hall of Famer. But if you are like mid-20s, late-20s, you have no file on him or that era, but you remember Devin Hester. We are taking what was an awesome thing out of the game. And we can implement it again. It can be relevant again. We can absolutely put the toothpaste back in the tube here in a way that works for everybody. I've seen it in the XFL. Let's go to Paul, who's in D.C. on Grant and Danny. Paul, what's up?
Hey, what's up, fellas? How y'all doing?
Good, buddy.
The way I look at that rules committee is, like my grandfather used to say, son, that's just some people that they create the job for to do something. Because at the end of the day, I mean, football is a gladiator sport. So to take away, you know, trying to get these cornerbacks, where would Daryl Green be as a 5'8 cornerback trying to tackle Michael Irvin that's 6'1", 6'2", and he couldn't pick him up or whatever? That's number one. Number two, I agree. Because just like you said, Brian Mitchell, Mike Nails, Joe Washington, Desmond Howard, and Charles Woodson wouldn't even have won a Heisman Trophy if it wasn't for punt returns and kick returns. That is one of the greatest plays of the game. We've seen people actually win football games on the Tennessee Miracle and all of those things. Like, they have to find a way to keep that as part of the game. I think they should move the kicker back, let him kick far away, and then also put the players, and they can't move until the ball is caught. And that way you can stop the concussion.
Well, that, other than moving the kicker back, that's literally what they're trying to do. Now, they have moved the coverage team downfield toward the guy catching it, toward the return man. That's basically what they're doing. You can't start running till he catches it, and there's going to be a return on 9 out of 10 kicks. Find the flaw there. Other than just saying no because it's change.
Or it looks goofy or something at first.
Sure, it will look goofy, by the way, at first. Other than saying no because it's the XFL and there's no way they have a better idea. It's not like they invented these things out of thin air or they polled the audience. You know, they had Dean Blandino and Mike Pereira and a bunch of 30-year NFL officials come up with their rule book, come up with what they viewed as enhancements that would be better than some of the ways the NFL has done it. And they have the opportunity, like minor league baseball, to experiment with things that might be better, which we're seeing implemented now in Major League Baseball. If you got a thought, 800-636-1067. Let's get people up to speed on everything going on in the tournament. Take a look to JMU's game tonight as well. You are listening to The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.